Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Before I get started, I think it's always important to let our audience know and understand the reasoning behind Jill Talks. This program is designed for us as a community to have a platform and outlet to have conversations related to what's taking place with the prison system, the effects that it has on all parties impacted by the system, such as those who are survivors of violence, individuals incarcerated, families, and communities. My goal is bringing more awareness to the side effects of prison and helping those who aren't aware to become educated, because this can happen to anyone in any state, because it's happening right now. In today's discussion, we will give a space for Suav Gonzalez, someone that is not only a friend but a brother to me. Suav is only 17 years of age when he was given a life sentence for first degree. He was released after serving 31 and a half years and 85 days in the prison system, because any day that you serve in prison counts. During the youth resentencing bill that passed with Miller versus Alabama, which deemed it unconstitutional to keep juveniles incarcerated for life without the possibility of parole, Wab was released from prison. So, first I want to say welcome back, Wab, and my main question for you is I want to know if you can tell our audience, tell us a little bit about the backstory of how a young Latino man like yourself got wrapped up into the prison system.
Well, first of all, let me say thank you for having me as your guest today. It is an honor for me to be on this show. Again, my name is Suav Gonzalez, and I'm originally from the South Bronx, New York, and in the early 80s, my mother decided that she wanted a better life for us. So she decided to move to Philadelphia. And she moved us from one bad neighborhood in the South Bronx to the heart of everything in North Philadelphia, which is what's considered the Badlands. So I get to Philadelphia. I'm an outsider. So automatic, you know, the New York mentality, I want to be down. So I hooked up with a few drug dealers in the neighborhood. And I thought I was the man. I thought I was the shit, you know. As a young Latino, you know, I had to keep that fake image up. And in doing that, it led me to being arrested for first-degree homicide. And I was sentenced to life without parole to die in prison. And how do a young Latino man end up in that situation from North Philadelphia? It's easy. You get caught up in the streets. You don't pay attention to your mother or father. You start looking for that love that you think you want in the streets, and you end up in prison. And once you end up in the penal system with a life sentence, it's almost like a death sentence. You are dying. Me being here today, speaking to you on Jail Talk, It's a blessing. It's a blessing from God. It's a miracle because lifers in the state of Pennsylvania do not get a chance to ever get out of prison once they put in prison with life.
Wow. You know, I was thinking about this video, Flav, and I don't know if people had an opportunity to kind of look at it, but you were a young man, and there's a video of you while you were incarcerated, and you were kind of giving it back to other individuals that, you know, going to prison wasn't a joke, and it shouldn't be treated as a game, because once you got to the DOC, it was like you were working. You were talking about getting up, you know, not sleeping, having to work. Like, it was not a luxury being in prison, although sometimes in our communities, it's almost like a stamp of honor if you didn't go to prison. Can you talk to me about, like, what inspired that video? Because you were a young man. You was really young in there, Slav.
Yeah, I'm still young.
You're still young, but you look like you just went to prison in that video.
But I say this, right, that from the day I got arrested to the day I got out, which it was 31 years and a half and 85 days, I knew I didn't want to be in prison. You know, I didn't know how I was going to get out, but I just knew, like, I'm not built for this. I wasn't born for this, and I don't want this. So that video came about. The superintendent gave us an opportunity to send a message to the youth at the public schools in Philadelphia. That's how we recorded that video. It's called Message to the Youth.
A message to the youth. How old were you when you recorded that video to the youth?
I was still in my niggerism days.
Oh my God.
I say that better. You know, I was still trying to find my way in the prison system. I was still trying to prove myself to the other prisoners that I'm not a walkover, I'm not a pushover. But at the same time, you know, I felt like I need to send a message to the youth that this is not the place you want to be. You know, real gangsters don't go to prison.
You're right about that.
Real gangsters do not go to prison, you know. So I just wanted to send a message like, yo, this is not the place to become a man. Like, for me, everything I know about being a man, I learned in prison. Everything. I learned how to shave in prison. I learned the meaning of manhood in prison. I learned how to conduct myself as a man in prison. You know, so everything in my life up to the point where I got out, I learned in prison. And I'm like, this is not the way I wanted to learn to shave.
Wow.
This is not the way, you know, that I want to become a man. You know, I went from being a 17-year-old kid to being forced to be a man, right? When I wasn't even ready to be a man.
Was there any, like, male figures outside of prison, but also while being in prison that, like, help you navigate, you know, some of those feelings? Because I know that, you know, we've in private had conversations about your mother and that relationship and even with family, but was there ever, like, a male presence to, like, guide you before being incarcerated, or even like some of the men that were present in prison? Like, did you have somebody that, like, mentored you during that time frame? Because
you know, a lot of people probably don't know the story, but if you get to hear my podcast, Swabby, you get it. My grandfather, which it was like the only male figure that I ever respected, was murdered while giving me a haircut when I was like 12. You know, somebody walked into his barbershop in 112th Street in New York, Harlem, and shot him. Tried to rob him, shot him. You know,
wow.
his blood dripping all over me. And that was like the only male figure I ever had in my life. You know, from that day, I vowed, like, I hurt, everybody got hurt. You know, and that's when it really started for me. So, no, out in the community, I had no male figures because I come from a community in the South Bronx where everybody was cracked out. It was either the crack dealers or the pimps. You know, anybody that knows about the South Bronx knows where Hutspoint is. Okay. They used to call it the Points. It was like the major hub for drugs and prostitutes. It's the equivalent to what they call Kensington today in Philadelphia. That's what the Point was like in New York back in the day. So that's where I come from.
So that was in the 80s?
That was in the 80s. So no, I had no role models out there. Now I come to prison, I had a few guys that I consider all right, old heads, but even in prison, I never was the type of guy that gonna call another man dad, or I'm not. You don't get them titles. Like them titles are not given to strangers. So no, but I did had a couple of old heads, a couple of old lifers, you know, gave me advice. Yo, you could go to school, you could do this. Your life is not really over, even if you're in here for the rest of your life, you know. But most of it, it was through, you know, doing it on your own and figuring it out.
Wow.
Doing it on your own, trials and tribulations.
Wow. So do you feel like, you know, because I feel like sometimes we have these conversations when talking to the office, the Victims Advocacy Unit, but it's almost like they dismiss the fact that individuals that were incarcerated were victimized even before incarceration. Talking about the experience with your grandfather and, you know, that taking place. And the thing is, it took place in front of you. So I could just only imagine how a young man at your age is like dealing with that trauma. I'm not sure if you received any type of therapy or counseling, but, you know, there's a lot of individuals that go to prison and have been in traumatizing. They have been in traumatizing moments and have not been able to, like, receive any help with that. Like, did you receive any type of help from, like, the OVA when that took place to you?
Nah. You know, when that happens, police came. My family, I knew.
Yeah, 'cause girls is players too. Yeah, yeah, 'cause girls is players too.
Keep it playing, baby.
Yo Sage.
'Cause girls is players too. Bitches getting money all around the world, 'cause girls is players too. What you know about living on the top? Penthouse suites looking down on the ops. Took her for a test drive, left them on the lot. Time is money, so I spent it on a watch. Hold on, little titties showing through the white tee. You can see the thong busting on my tight jeans.
Okay.
Rocks on my fingers like a nigga wife me. Got another shorty, she ain't nothing like me. Yeah, about to catch another flight. Yeah, apple bottom make him wanna bite. Yeah, I just wanna have a good night. I just wanna have a good night. Hold up, if you don't know, now you know. If you broke, then you gotta let him go. You could have anybody, any money, mo.
Father, I know we were having some technical issues there, but we were kind of discussing about the fact that you discussed a traumatizing experience with your grandfather being killed in front of you at a very young age. And what I was asking was the OVA at that point in time, were they invested in helping you through that grief? Because at times there's a lot of individuals that go to prison and have been victims even before being incarcerated. And I also feel like sometimes that can add to the direction that they go into, and you were just kind of addressing it.
Well, no, absolutely not. When that happened, the police was called. Even though I knew who did it, I refused to snitch, right? Because I always said, you know, when I grow older, I'm going to kill this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, the guy would receive, I think it was 5 years. He received 5 years. And
he only received 5 years for...
Yeah, he only received 5 years. And New York at the time was real light on putting people locked up for shit, especially if they think it was drug related and stuff.
Okay.
So no, I didn't get no therapy because in the Puerto Rican culture is man up, Mans Don't Cry, you know, and I kept growing up with that, but I had that resentment. And, you know, as I got older, I always vowed, if I catch this dude, I'm going to kill this dude, right? Because I never forgot his face. Never forgot his face. And it just happened to be that in 1986, I get locked up. I get put in jail for life. In 1989, there's a riot in Camp Hill. And the jail get burned down. And prisoners get shipped out all over the country to the federal system. I end up going to Leavenworth, Kansas. When I get there, who the heck you think I seen?
Oh my God, you see the guy
that killed my grandfather.
The recording has reached the maximum length. To replay your message, press 1. To delete and re-record your message, press 3.
Hello?
Yeah, Christina. Can you hear? Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, so I get there, and the guy that killed my grandfather, you know, he's there. But he don't know who I am. I know who he is, though.
Okay. So, what was that interaction like for you?
Like I said, I was doing my niggerism days. So I said, you know what? This is where my pains will end. So, you know, I stroke a conversation up with him. Find out, I want to make sure that he was the right one. And he said, yeah. So, you know, and he was like a homosexual. And when I say homosexual, he was what they consider in jail booty bandit. You know, so he must have thought, here comes a pretty Puerto Rican. You know, at that time, I was real pretty. I was like special ed. I you know, I was 19 years old, little pretty kid. And he thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get this little. He was like in a candy store. So he invited me to the weight room. But I already knew what I had planned. So I went and got a knife. And when we got to the weight room, he started lifting weights. As soon as he went down on the bench, I hit him up.
Mm-hmm.
I hit him up, you know. And we went back to the cell block.
How old was this man, Suave?
This man at the time was about 44, 45.
And how old were you?
I was like 19. 18, 19. No, I was 86, 78. I was 20.
Okay.
I was 20. I was fresh. I was 3 years into my bid. 3 years into my life sentence.
And he was serving the five. He was serving. Well, no. Hold on a second. He was serving another.
He was serving another bid, another federal time. So once he gets that, the jail get put on lockdown, and he didn't tell. You know, he didn't tell. But the guards knew that it was me. So since he didn't tell, they couldn't charge me up. What they did, they put me back on a plane, and they shipped me back to the state of Pennsylvania. Because for some reason, the state messed up when they put me in the federal system. I wasn't supposed to be in the federal system.
Wow, so you weren't supposed to be in the federal system.
Right.
My thing is, how is it that you get placed into a position like that where, let's say, for instance, like there was no record of like how he had committed a crime against your family, and then you guys are within the same prison. There's like no process for that.
No, there was no record of that. But that's the system. That's the justice system that we all live in America under.
Wow. So that can cause quite an issue if you have someone who's committed a crime against your family, and you're in the same facility. And you guys come and encounter with each other.
But I've seen people in prison throughout my 31 years get killed over that.
Wow. Wow. So that just kind of reflects back to the DOC and what are they doing to kind of protect people, and then also to keep them separated in these type of situations where there's not any type of closure.
Right.
I I do have another question for you, because I know that while being in prison, you know, like you said, you raised yourself practically, and you spent more time in prison than you spent outside of prison. And I know personally that while you were in prison, you were identified as a leader, a mentor, and you were setting up programs. Like, can you talk about, like, some of the accolades that you have while being in prison? Because sometimes people don't really understand all the great things that people are doing to just kind of, you know, show other people, like, they add value not only to that environment, but also to the community outside of prison.
Oh, yeah, sure. While I was in prison, after my first 10, 12 years of being in solitary confinement, I spent 7 years in solitary confinement. I decided, you know what, I want to be a changed person. So, you know, I taught myself how to read in solitary confinement, came out, got my GED, enrolled in college, got my associate's degree and bachelor's degree from Villanova University, became the leader of the biggest Latino organization in the prison system in PA, LACEL, the Latin American Culture Exchange Organization. And under that umbrella, I was able to create hundreds of programs that the DOC would take and try to implement, but they would never work because prisoners don't want programs that the DOC implement. They never work. They come with a lot of restriction. So I created a scholarship called the Education Over Incarceration Scholarship. They still exist to this day.
What did the scholarship do? Did it help people on the outside or the inside?
Well, what we did, we used to give scholarships to students in the Bethlehem School District.
Wow.
So children of incarcerated parents. And all our scholarships were $1,000 and up. To this day, we have given out 181 scholarships.
To this day.
And also, I was part of the crew that created the Restorative Justice Mural Arts Program in the prison system, where we was able to create 72 murals from inside the prison that are gracing the walls of Philadelphia today.
I know, and I've seen some of the work that the men have. I mean, they're all over the buildings throughout Philadelphia. I mean, people just have to look at them, but they are beautiful. And
yeah,
that's a project that started inside, right, Swab?
Yeah, we did that. We also created a book drive for a couple of schools. And under my leadership, we adopted like different schools in different districts. And every month, we used to send school supplies to one classroom in different districts.
Wow.
I know that
art is like one of the things that's very important to you. And I know that while you were incarcerated, you became like this talented artist. Like, I don't know if you were drawing prior to being incarcerated, but I know that when you got inside, it was like something that, I don't know, you inspired a lot of people through your art. And I know that you're still inspiring them, because you told me just recently, you know, somebody that's a celebrity just bought a piece of artwork from you. So can you talk to me about, you know, how art saved you while you were in prison, or just kind of like inspired you?
Oh, yeah,
you?
Yeah. I got into art because of desperation and necessity. Because, you know, when you're in prison, you know, after the first 4 or 5 years, everybody in your circle fall off. Mm-hmm. You don't really have that support. So the only one I still had left at that time was my mother, when she was still alive. You know, and I'm not the type of person that like to, I never asked my mother for nothing, ever. So yeah. I was like, damn, man, why should my mother got to be sending me money up here for commissary in there? So I picked up, I had to find something I could do, and art was like the best thing. I was really good doing music. I did a lot of music. I even recorded I even recorded a tape.
A cassette tape. What you was doing, Flav?
Oh, I used to do a lot of rap music. And so art became something that I knew I could do and survive of. So I started doing art and I started perfecting it. And that's how I kept alive. That's how I was able to save money. That's how I was able to support some of the projects that we was doing. And yes, when you're in prison, you're not going to sell your artwork at the value that it's really worth. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, because you're doing it for other prisoners. So you got to figure out, I'm doing work for $10, $12.
Okay.
That equals in street values thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars.
Can you also elaborate too? Because, you know, your art right now is in an art gallery, and, you know, you have your shows where your art is being displayed. I know you also wrote books too while you're in there, but can you tell the audience where that artwork can be purchased at?
Yeah, anyone that wants to know about my work, they could go to the Morton Contemporary Art Gallery in Philadelphia. All you got to do is type Suave Gonzalez art, and it will pop up. But again, art became something of a survival. It became therapeutic. I got so good at it that I was teaching watercolor classes inside to other prisoners. And recently, when we first debuted this show and my show, Shaquille O'Neal Foundation from out of Jersey was hearing the show on Fat Life Radio. Let's give it up for Fat Life.
Yeah.
And they went down the gallery and, you know, and decided to get a few pieces of art, blessing the walls, you know. So again, you never know who's hearing your voice. You never know who's gonna show up. And, you know, they ain't had to do that. But the fact that he hurt the show and it was like, wow, let me see what he got. You know, so yeah, art to me is therapeutic. It's a survival kit. And it's something that I could always use to maintain and sustain myself out here.
I wanted to talk about your show because DBI, Defy Incarceration, if people don't really know about it, they need to get informed about it. And I know that, you know, it kind of started with your story. And it also started, like, while you were inside meeting with people. How did you come to getting that show started? And what was your mindset behind the show and just letting people be aware about this mass incarceration and people serving a life sentence and not having the possibility of parole in the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, DBI Media is a LLC company that was funded by myself and Mr. Kevin McCracken, my partner, my brother. And we are both two formerly incarcerated individuals that just had an idea to bring stories to the general public that normally you won't hear, to address the issue without being censored. And that's how DBI, Death by Incarceration, came about. We own our own show. We own our own media company. We are probably the first podcast media company in the United States completely run by two formerly incarcerated individuals.
Wow. And not only that, but let's just talk about that Pulitzer Award that he just recently won, because I mean, from a man that was such at a young age being incarcerated, you know, you taught yourself everything, you got a degree while in prison, you started your art, you gave back to the community within the prison system, and you have this amazing show that just is very real, it's raw. I know I've been on it, I know I'm getting interviewed today, but you know, you're a Pulitzer Prize winner. How does that feel?
I mean, it feels amazing. You know, everybody tell me, oh, you should be humble. You know, but what the fuck the humble means? What the fuck does that mean? That you don't want me to brag about my accomplishment? No, exactly. I'm glad. As a matter of fact, I'm going public. I'm changing my name to Mr. Pulitzer Prize, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm changing it. I'm going to tell you why, right? Because when people do bad, the media will kill us in the media. They'll put all our pictures up. This is why we don't supposed to let these people out of jail. But when we do good, you don't hear the media come out.
You're right about that.
You don't hear it. They don't even want to talk about it. But yet, Suave Gonzalez is the first former juvenile lifer in the United States of America and probably the world to ever win a Pulitzer Prize award for a real life story.
That's what I'm talking about. The first.
You know, so yes, it is an honor. It is a pleasure because this is what we supposed to do when we get a second chance. And this is what can happen when we give people a second chance to rebuild their life. This is what can happen. You know, I would love to think, oh, I'm the only one that could do this in America. Man, do you know how many lifers in the United States deserve the same opportunities I got, if not even more? I'm not special. I am not special. I am just somebody that refuse to lose. Period. Even when I was in prison with a life sentence, I always tell myself, I'm going to find a way out.
That was my next question, Suave. I was going to ask you, like, being given that life sentence, did you at any point give up on your opportunity at coming home? Because, you know, sometimes people become institutionalized. And I was having a conversation with someone the other day where they had mentioned that they were taking a class at school, and they were taking a college class at the facility, and you know, the college professor kind of like kept the person after class and was basically like, you know, why did you put that number, you know, the two letters and four numbers on your paperwork? Why didn't you put your name? Like, you're in a college class. And, you know, did you ever not think you weren't coming home?
No, not for one. I never lived my life inside the prison like I wasn't coming home.
Okay.
I knew I was coming home. I just didn't know when.
Because
everything I was doing was contributing towards my freedom. Everything. You know, so I never once believed that I'm not coming home. You know, when you stop believing that you're not coming home, that's when you go to the left field.
Yeah.
That's when you start messing engaging in activities you're not supposed to be engaging.
Suave,
I never once not believed that I was coming home. Because I tell you what, I'm free now.
But
my plan was to escape before the age of 50.
Wow. How old were you coming home?
I came home when I was 47.
Oh, you did it right before 50. Now, Suave, I know that you personally have that page up. And one thing that I admire about you is that despite the fact that you're home and you're a free man, you still haven't forgotten about any of your comrades that are currently incarcerated. And I know personally you have a page that's dedicated to all the accolades that, you know, men and women in prison are doing so that people are aware, like, we have people that are being rehabilitated, but then being rehabilitated in prison is such a hard challenge because there's so many obstacles in order for a person to be educated, to show their progress, to show that they're doing productive things, and to show that they have this transformation that's going on because you're not the same person at the age of 17 that you are at the age 47 coming home. You know, you grow, you learn, and you have a different type of wisdom. So can you talk about that page? And also, you know, what's the name of it so other people can know. And doing that, I also want you to talk about that program that you're running right now, you know, in your current position.
Well, you know, you're right. Thank you. You brought that up, right? But I never forgot about my brothers and sisters inside the penal system. I never promised anyone nothing when I came home because I had nothing to promise. But, you know, I realized that there's a lot of people in there that have done some magnificent work that the public would never get to hear about, ever. And I know how I felt when I was in prison, and I'm doing all these work, all these accomplishments, and nobody knew about it. Nobody. I couldn't find one person to put me on Facebook or Instagram. Not one, because it takes a lot of work, and I get it. So, you know, when the brothers contacted me, my friend Robert Grove, as a matter of fact, he's one of the hosts to Life Without Parole, L Rock Radio, Friday mornings on FetLife. When he contacted me and asked me, yo, will you be interested? I said, let's do it. So I created a page, which is called The Grove's Notebook, that simply highlights lifers and their accomplishments. And okay. I'm not saying I am the one that's going to open the prison doors. I'm not asking nobody to open the prison doors. All I'm saying is that everyone should be view on their own merits. Everyone. You know, and if the public think that a person deserves a second chance, then we need to fall behind that person and make sure that that person is commuted. Because when you read these profiles, we talking about guys that's been in prison 40, 50, 60 years. Guys, they went in when they was 18, 19. And they've been in jail 50, 60 years. In the United States of America, the greatest country ever, this is not supposed to be happening in our country. You know, at what point do we say enough is enough? That man or woman has paid enough for the crime that they've been accused of. And I'm not even going to talk about the wrongful convictions. You know, I'm talking about guys that went in when they was 19 and they now in their 70s. It don't make no sense. If we call ourselves a forgiving nation, shouldn't we have some forgiveness and compassion in our heart for our brothers and sisters on lockdown? So, I don't forget about them. You know, because if it wasn't for them, I would not be here today doing what I do.
You're right about that. So how has your transition been since being home? And, you know, what is some of the work that you're doing? Because I know you're also an advocate for the men and women, and you're also an advocate just in different ways. Talk to me about your transition back being here.
Well, I'd be lying if I said that my transition been smooth, because but it's not, it haven't been hard either. And the reason for that is because I never let myself get close and boxed in. You know, I always believe that I got to have a job, so I go work. I always had a job. I always had a place to stay. And I always had food on the table. And that's all I need. I don't get caught up with what society think I should have. Period. So I live a certain lifestyle. I don't hang out in clubs. You know, I go to work and come home. If I'm not traveling, speaking, I'm home. And if I'm home, I'm painting. You know, and if I'm at school where I work at Community College of Philadelphia, I'm working. I'm helping people rebuild their life. People that's been impacted by the justice system. I help them get into college and rebuild their life. You know, but again, this is what we're supposed to do. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, why me? You know, no, I've been blessed. I've really been blessed with a support team. I've been blessed with opportunities. I've been blessed with friends. And I've been blessed to just be able to have the ability to do certain things. You know, so I share that. I share that. And sometimes it gets frustrated. But for the most part, it's like, yo, if you got something and you have enough, share the rest with people. You don't need it all.
That's what I'm talking about, Swab. And that's just one thing about you. You're more of a giver than a taker. And you do it in such a big way. And, you know, I always see you as a person that's humble. Like, you stick to yourself. You know, you have this amazing show that you won this prize for, the Pulitzer Prize winner, you know. And not only that, but you're Latino. So even to be Latino and have that award, go ahead.
Let me correct you. Suave Gonzalez. You know, we on FetLife Radio. You know, this is it. This is our home right now, right? But Suave Gonzalez is at the pinnacle of journalism.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I like to brag about it. You know, journalists become journalists to win a Pulitzer. I didn't become a journalist. I am a podcaster. I am somebody that simply sat behind a recorder and decided to tell my story for the world to hear, to at least save one youth from ending up in prison. I wasn't chasing no awards. I didn't even know what a Pulitzer Prize was till they told me, right?
How did you feel about that?
But let me say this. Not only did we win the Pulitzer Prize Award, we also won the IDA Award.
Wow.
So those in the podcast business, they know what an IDA Award. The IDA Award is the Oscars of podcasts. It's the equivalent of winning an Oscar. That's what an IDA Award is. You know, so we won two of the biggest awards in the field. A former lifer. Latino.
Say that again. A former lifer.
Latino from the Bronx, Philadelphia.
That's what I'm talking about.
30, 40 years from now, when grandchildren and whoever want to go research it, when they look up Suave Gonzalez, you know what they're going to say in the history books?
Tell me what they're going to say, Suave.
Pulitzer Prize winner. You know why? Because history already been made. It's already been made. This is historic.
You're right about that.
It's historic. And I just want people to know, like, yo, if a guy like me that went to prison with an IQ of a 56, didn't know how to read and write, could come out and win a Pulitzer Prize 31 years and a half and 85 days later, if I could do it, I know you could do it, because you probably smarter than me. I ain't been reading all my life. I just been reading for the last 20 years of my life.
So
you do the math how long I've been reading and writing.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if I was born into a reading and writing culture, I probably would have been 4 or 5 Pulitzer Prize awards into the game.
Slav, I think for you personally, you have this charisma, you got this aura. People have really taken a liking to you because they see somebody who's genuine. I mean, if people don't know you, I'm letting you know. They see someone who's genuine, somebody who's real, and somebody who's authentic. And I know that you've been put in a position because people saw from within, before you coming out of prison, that you were adding value already to that space. And we can't throw away people that are in prison just because they're in prison. Do you feel like there were certain people that were beneficial to you coming home?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of people, man, that I got to thank for taking me under the wing and showing me the game. And one of them is Maria Inahosa, from Futuro Media. You know, she's been in my corner 30 years, 30, you know, she's been there from day one. She's been there from day one. It's been there. Another one is Roger Supernet. He's been there. You know, so these are people that believe in what I was doing and believe in me even more than I believe in myself.
Wow. And Maria Anahofo, she's also someone who also has her own programming. And she's amazing.
Maria Anahofo is a legend in journalism.
I know.
A legend. Like, legend. First Latina in many media rooms, CNN all the way down.
Did y'all meet? Because I never asked you that question, Suave.
She came into the prison, and I introduced myself, and I told her, look, I'm serving life. I'm from New York. She gave me her number, and we just started writing, calling, and she started visiting, and that's how our friendship started.
Oh, wow.
But the thing is, right, Maria and the hostess should have been winning a Pulitzer Prize award. She should have been winning that because she's done some amazing work.
She has.
But she won one with my story, with the Suave story. You know how that make me feel?
That tell today, me how it makes you feel. Tell me.
Honorable, proud, because today there are four Latina women crowned Pulitzer Prize winners because of my story.
That's amazing.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Of course, it better be amazing. I mean, listen, you know, again, I'm not going to be humble about this because this is not no small thing that we're talking about. We're talking about a Pulitzer Prize. We're talking about if I was a white guy that with the same story winning this, I'd be all over there. I'd be on in every goddamn show in the world.
You're right.
But I'm Latino, you know, so I got to depend on FetLife and other stations that believe in what we're doing to put this kind of work out. But I want my people, my audience, my black and brown people to understand we could do this. And if you don't believe it, look at my story.
You're right about that.
I'm not even supposed to be home. I'm supposed to die in prison. I'm sitting talking to jail talk right now. Just looking at my Pulitzer Prize and just, you know, this nice diamond crystal from Tiffany. And I'm like, wow, that's mine. I earned that.
Suave, you did earn it. And one thing about your story is a remarkable story. You're resilient just as an individual. I got an opportunity to touch the Pulitzer Award. And that thing is beautiful. And also, they have you in that book. I forget exactly what page you're on, but it talks about you.
201.
Your story.
Page 201.
201, page 201. So if anybody ever looks at that book, your name is there for history, like you said. Do you feel like prison was a lesson for you? Do you feel like it changed your life and transformed you into the man that you are today?
Absolutely.
Like having that whole experience and besides that, you're so humble and you still give. So how do you feel about that?
Man, prison was my university. Prison was the university where I transformed from a boy to man. Where, like I said earlier when I started, that's where I learned everything. Everything. Everything about being a man. You know, the first time I shaved was in prison. I ain't had my father or nobody else. You know, I was looking into the mirror, you know. Act like I knew what I was doing in shave. So nah, prison was my learning grounds, man. But it's not a place that I recommend to anybody. You know, if I had to do it again, I'd rather do it out here than in prison.
Do you feel like you would have died on the streets if it wasn't for prison?
Absolutely. I would have been dead in 1986.
Wow. What would you tell to a young man that's your age, that's kind of moving in a pace that can get a person sent to prison? What would you tell the young like youth at this age about prison and just kind of getting out of the habits of being in the streets because of the culture?
Stop trying to be a gangster. Stop trying to be a follower. Because if you call yourself trying to get some money, you don't get no money in prison.
How much they get paid, Swab?
You get paid 15 to 18 cents an hour in prison. So you're not getting no money in prison, right? Plus, second, if you following the rap culture, I never seen rappers making millions of dollars. They want to keep it real and go to prison. Like I see today in today's culture. Right? So what I'm saying, cut the acting out. Cut the acting out, because when they put you in that cell, 24 hours lockdown, where you cannot even come to your mother's funeral if she passed away. You cannot come. They will not bring you. Will you be in a cell dying, watching other people die, smelling another man take a shit while you eating? Is that That's what you want to do in life? Is that what you want to do in life? Is that who you want to be? Is that keeping it real? Trust me. You don't want to be in prison. Prison is not for you. I suggest.
Swab, tell them to watch that video.
No, I suggest. You don't got to watch my video. Just watch any video out there. They're telling you to stay out of jail. Because I'm telling you, once you're in the system with a life sentence, that equals a death sentence. You will die in prison.
You're right about that. And I also want to say, one thing I appreciate about Swab is that you keep it real, and you've been keeping it real since your time being in there. You've been keeping it real since you came home. You've been giving back since you were in there and giving back. So, like, people coming home, I know you have a program that you're dedicated to, and it helps people to get educated and go back to college and let them know there's opportunities. Do you want to talk about that program?
Yeah, like I said, the I Am More program at Community College of Philadelphia. We are there to help brothers and sisters rebuild their life after incarceration. The only qualification is a GED and the desire to come to school. You bring 50%, I give you the other 50, right? And it's a college program where once you win, a lot of people don't want to leave. You know why? Because statistically, once you have higher education, you age out of that crime mentality. You find something else. I got guys right now, they are attending UPenn for I'm on PhDs. They started my program.
Wow.
You know, I got interns that's been in the system. They are now interning at the criminal justice system, the courthouse for judges. You know, so
how long is the program, Swab?
The program is a 2-year program. It's an associate's degree. But if you maintain a 2.0 GPA, I could transfer you to any 4-year institution for a bachelor's.
That's amazing. So for those people out there, take advantage. Education is not something you want to sleep on. We know the cost. But to have an opportunity to get educated, to do something else, to have a career, especially those individuals that are coming back into the system. I know it's hard. I know it's hard to get good wages. And then we already have that red flag that's also tied into people coming home, which it makes it harder. Talk to Swab, because he knows, and he will keep you guys informed and help you out. And before we close out, Jail Talk has this last moment where we do a jail call, and jail calls, we know they only are 15 minutes where you're talking to your loved one and trying to put in as much information into one call. But on Jail Talk, a jail call is a call of action where we want you to take 15 minutes out of your day to get educated and to become aware about this prison system and just the effects that it has on our community. So since Suave, you're here today, you know, I want you to give the jail call to our audience and let them know what you want them to take 15 minutes out of their day to become educated about.
I want to send a jail call to the streets of Philadelphia and to all the young brothers out there that love pulling them triggers, the shooters. You know, think about this. Take 15 minutes to think about this. Is it worth? Does 30 seconds that it takes to pull that trigger worth you giving up your life? Just sit back and imagine everything you could accomplish in your life, in the span of your life. Now think about how you just threw that away for 30 seconds of pleasure. 30 seconds. Think about that. Think about you're never going to have kids if you don't already have kids when you get locked up. You're never going to see your mother again as a free man or your family members. You're never going to get to experience what it is to be in a real relationship with a woman if you're a teenager. You're never going to get to experience adulthood in the real world. And then think about this. You're going to have somebody your age with a chip on their shoulders telling you when to lock up, when to use the bathroom, when to eat, what to eat, when to speak, when you could call your family, when you could see your family, when you could write to your family, what to wear, what to buy from commissary. When you add that up, you know what that is, ladies and gentlemen? You are a slave to the system. The system is the master. And it's perfectly legal. If you don't believe me, look at the 13th Amendment.
That's what I'm talking about, Suave. Keep them educated. And again, Jail Talk will be back every Friday at 4 p.m. So make sure you tune in. Next up, we got Suave Gonzalez and we got Kevin McCracken with DBI Live coming on next after this show.
A man feel better than a woman. Queen with a crown that be down for whatever. There were few things that's forever. My lady, we can make war or make babies. Back when I was nothing, you made a brother feel like he was something. That's why I'm with you to this day, boo, no frontin'. Even when the skies were gray, you would rub me on my back and say, baby, it'll be okay. Now that's real to a brother like me, baby. Never ever give my cootie away and keep it tight, alright? And I'ma walk these doors so we can live in a fat ass crib with thousands of kids. Life. You don't need a ring to be my wife. Just be there for me and I'ma make sure we be living in the effing lap of luxury. I'm realizing that you didn't have to funk with me, but you did. Now I'm going all out, kid, and I got mad love to give. You my nigga. Jones for your body and your skin tone. 5 minutes alone, I'm already on the bump.
Plus, I love the fact you got a mind of your own. No need to shop around, you got the good stuff at home. Even if I'm locked up north, you in the world, rocking 3/4 of cloth, never showing your stuff off, boo. It be true, me for you, that's how it is. I be your Noah, you be my Wiz. I'm your Mr., you my Mrs., with hugs and kisses, Valentine cards and birthday wishes. Please, we on another level of planning, of understanding, the bomb.